I want to start by giving Ken a hug. Maybe I'll sit in the background for a little bit.
Okay. Friend of mine in back asked me if I was nervous, and I said, "You know, how would I know? I'm an ACA. I don't feel my feelings. So of course I'm nervous." So I'm going to start out by reading today's reading in our little Strengthening My Recovery book about about sponsorship for today. And today is the 26th. And this, can everybody hear me? Okay. Okay. This is from the Big Red Book. Sponsorship is the vehicle by which we take the road less traveled to a true connection with others and a God of our understanding. Coming from a family of dysfunction, we developed a fear of authority. We learned early that our opinions, feelings, and attitudes were insignificant. The power belonged to the raging alcoholic, the enabling spouse, and any older children in the family who were given authority over us because they had been put in charge of most of our care. In alcoholic homes, the parents were too involved in fighting or manipulating each other over alcoholic rages and abusive behavior to care for us. When we escaped, we vowed never to let another person control us, yet we found ourselves either being the abuser or the dependent one in most relationships we developed, including working relationships, religious relationships, and friendships. When we finally found ACA, for some of us, choosing a sponsor to help us work the steps often led to the same type of relationship we were familiar with. Then we discovered the fellow traveler model of sponsorship. We found this peer-to-peer concept helped keep us out of our people-pleasing or running someone else's life behaviors. It put us on equal footing and allowed us to travel the road to recovery together. On this day, I will walk hand in hand with my fellow traveler so we can help each other to recover on the less traveled road. I am just so grateful to this program. I'm so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful to Duncan, who came to me, it was about 6 years ago, and said, "I want to start ACA again in Santa Barbara. Will you help me?" I said, yeah, absolutely. And so a small group of us restarted ACA in Santa Barbara about 6 years ago. And we were interested in having sponsors, but nobody had any experience being an ACA sponsor. So we didn't have sponsors, so we decided that we would use this fellow traveler concept where we would serve as co-sponsors. We'd get together, we'd work the steps, we'd do the traditions, we'd talk, we'd support one another, we'd love one another, we'd be there for one another. And that worked perfectly because I had, you know, everything that they say in this book is true. I had a fear of authority figures. I hated having somebody tell me to do anything. I wanted to be right. I had this really poor self-esteem. The sponsorship relationships I'd had before where I had sponsors, they weren't real great because that was my attitude. They just weren't real great. So it was really refreshing to me to think that here we're all in this together. We all understand one another. We're all rank beginners, and we're going to help one another. And that was great. And so we encouraged one another. We had a lot of meetings. We encouraged one another to get on the phone, talk to one another whenever we were having problems, get together with other people, work the steps, just be there for one another. And we used to have lunches and parties together, and it was a real social thing. It was a very, very good experience. After the program had been around for about a month, some of my friends decided, wouldn't it be great if we had like a little study group where we were all co-sponsors and we could get together and work the steps? And so I, together with three other friends, two other guys and a woman, we formed this very tight group where we got together twice a week for an hour and a half each meeting. So that's 3 hours a week, and for almost 2 years, we worked together, and we worked the steps, we worked the traditions, we worked through the laundry list, We worked the promises, and we worked anything else that we were having difficulty with. And that was probably the greatest recovery experience I've ever had. Absolutely, absolutely. Because we got to know one another, we supported one another, and I'm going to look at my notes. So what did we do for one another? Okay. So what's the problem? You know, what problem do we have here? We have all the laundry list traits, and we don't like ourselves, right? And the solution is to become our own loving parent. We don't talk. We've learned not to talk. We've learned not to trust. We've learned not to feel. We've learned not to be ourselves. We've learned to put up this front. We've learned, if I don't like myself, what do? I go out and I people please. I try to get people to like me, right? I go out and I overachieve. I try to prove to myself that I'm worthwhile, right? And all of that's empty, you know? It's trying to fill this black hole I can't fill from out there. So I end up doing a lot of stuff that maybe gives me some temporary relief, but in the long run, really doesn't help me to love myself. It's really a waste of time. In fact, it's an addiction. It's just like any other addiction. It's a distraction from this pain I have in my heart and my soul. Okay? So to learn to love myself, I really need to be in an environment where I can talk. I can feel like somebody's listening, that what I'm saying has some importance. I need to trust. I need to know that when I'm sharing with somebody, they're not putting me down, they're not judging me. And I need to feel, because I'd stuff my feelings all my life. I remember my parents saying, you know, you shouldn't feel that way, don't feel that way, don't cry, you're being silly, you know, be strong, be tough. Okay, and it doesn't work. Doesn't work because I found that I had stuffed a lot of feelings. One is anger, right? I was just full of rage because I was living in an unjust system. I was being punished for stuff I didn't do, for God's sake. And I had these people telling me to do stuff that was crazy. And they told me, you know, I can't talk. I can't talk about it. It really impresses me that in some of the readings we have, you know, it says, you know, that our problem is not, it's not the pain that we go through. It's the fact that we can't talk about it. We can't express it. I had to bottle all this stuff up. And I noticed with anger, what would happen would be, I would be all calm and mellow. But if some little thing would happen, I would think somebody was laughing at me. I would just blow up. There'd be this incredible rage that was completely not proportional to what happened. I remember doing just crazy stuff. I thought some parking lot attendant was laughing at me. I remember getting out of the car and running around the parking lot chasing this guy trying to kill him. I mean, really? Really? I mean, that's crazy. An abandonment. You know, I might ask somebody if, would you like to have lunch with me? And they say, no. And I would take that as a mortal wounding. I'm not good enough. Right? What does it take? So I had all these stuffed emotions, abandonment, particularly abandonment and anger. And I needed to be in a situation where I could talk, I could express myself, I could feel, and I could feel safe. And I had this group of people, you guys, and my own little love group of, you know, four people. And we talked about our most intimate, the things that were most private to us, the things that we feared, we didn't want anyone else to know, right? And, you know, basically we went through the fourth step, and we did a fifth step. We shared all this with everybody. It was like, you know, we were all saying the same thing. We were all afraid of the same things. We'd all gone through the same stuff, and we'd done the same stuff we were embarrassed about. And we'd done the same stuff we didn't want anybody to hear about. It was like it was okay. Everybody understood. It was okay. So for the first time in my life, really the first time in my life, it was okay just to be myself. You know how freeing that is? You know, I could, you know, I used to, I remember as I was growing up, I was always trying to impress people, you know, say the right things and to appear intelligent or to appear a certain way. And I was constantly editing myself. I couldn't just stand there and have a conversation with somebody and let it flow. No, I had to edit myself. I felt I was trapped. There was something wrong. There's something wrong with me. I can't do anything right. And it was right there, and it was hindering my ability to express myself, my ability to live. And so, you know, just doing a fourth step and a fifth step in a loving environment, it completely erased my shame at being myself. And it erased a lot of my guilt because, you know, I'd done a lot of crappy stuff to people in my life, right? And that just reinforced that I wasn't a good person. This, you know, the bad things that I'd done, it just made me feel like a worse person. And it just absolutely didn't help. And I learned that I'm not those bad things that I did. Because here were these people I was with who I loved very dearly. They were the closest people to me in my life. And they'd done the same crap I'd done. And it didn't matter. It just didn't matter, you know. And I also learned that, you know, a lot of the stuff, I used to be this overachiever, all this stuff I would do to make myself feel good about myself. Got good grades, did this job, tried to make this much money. You know, all of this stuff, have possessions, have successes. That didn't matter either. Right? Because I'm not this bad stuff I did. I'm not the good stuff I did either. I learned in here that if I love myself unconditionally, and Tony A emphasizes that, if I love myself unconditionally, I can be okay no matter what. It doesn't matter what you think. Right? That's the solution, is for me to love myself and accept myself unconditionally. It doesn't have anything to do with what I did or what I've done, good or bad, or what I'm going to do. Just do I love myself, right? And my group of co-sponsors helped me learn to love myself unconditionally. It was absolutely an invaluable experience. So I am going to, well, okay. I'm going to say another few things here before I turn it over to Larry. You know, one of the things that I did is isolate. How many people can relate to that? Yeah. I was afraid of people. I isolated, right? We can't recover in isolation. We hear that over and over in all these programs. Why? Because my thinking's distorted. My feelings are distorted. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I see things wrong. I judge myself incorrectly. Because I judge myself, I judge you. I need a reality check. I married an alcoholic, and I heard how I caused this person to be alcoholic, how I caused all of these sins in this person's life, and I bought it. I caused her to drink. I'm a horrible person, right? I needed a reality check. I needed to hear from my friends. Their alcoholics said the same thing to them, right? Reality check, right? I needed to hear that you're okay just the way you are, Ken. Reality check. I couldn't have heard that if I'd been isolating, if I'd been afraid. Okay, so I need to come out of isolation. And that's it for now. I'm going to turn it over to Larry. I'll be back.
Okay, so I'm Larry. I tried therapy one time for 8 years. And this lady was amazing. And she said something to me over the years. But one of the things that she said to me was, deep down, you know you're a good guy. And I thought, am I? Do I really believe that or not? So I want to grab a note or two. And my security blanket is my books. So I bring my books. Right? You didn't know this was going to be a book study. So I looked up deep down you know, to prepare, like, what am I going to talk about? It says, deep down, if you know or feel something deep down, you do know or feel it although you try to pretend that you do not. That's one thing that I read. And another one said, if you have a particular quality deep down, you have that quality, although you try to keep it hidden from other people. And so, to me, that's like this sensitive side of me, this vulnerable side of me. In my family, it was considered a weakness to show any sensitivity. I had to be a tough guy, as Ken mentioned. And so that deep down part of me, when I've come in here, I've thought of it. That's my inner child. And so so I looked up some inner child stuff. And here's what I came up with. That's not it. Here we go. Okay. These are quotes. The most sophisticated people I know, inside they are all children. That's Jim Henson, the Muppets guy. This one. The child is in me still, and sometimes not so still. And that's Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers. After a while, the middle-aged person who lives in her head begins to talk to her soul, the kid. And that's Anne Lamott, and I don't even know who she is. I just love that quote. You guys know who Anne Lamott is?
Yeah, Anne Lamott.
Okay, and then Joe Jones is with that, too. How about this one? I thought about adults. I wondered if it was true, if they were all really children wrapped up in adult bodies. And that's Neil Gaiman, and it's The Ocean at the End of the Lane is the book. Here's one that really hurt us. Works for me. If you want to be a good parent, please heal your own wounds. Heal all of them and be confident that you've done so before you seriously consider having children. The unresolved child within you is the real child you need to embrace and heal and raise. And that's Daniel Meckler, Breaking from Your Parents. And then this one. I wondered about my inner child. In fact, I was troubled. Did I have an inner child? I asked myself. Given that, in essence, I'd just been born. And so for me, coming in here and hearing these things about, and by the way, if you look on page 298 in your big red book, they have key terms. And it's the only place in the big red book. So let me see if I can find it. And they have four key terms, and one of them is inner child. The other one is false self. The other one is, I hope, true self. And then our actual, you know, our loving parent. And on page 290, the only place they ever go and give us any key terms. And 298. So when I got here and I started hearing those kinds of things, I had a hard time thinking, did I have an inner child? And then I wanted to have that inner child, and I thought that inner child for me was 5 years old. And it went into hiding, deep hiding, when I was 12 years old. I had a major fun PTSD event with my father, who I hated for many, many years. I can barely talk about the stuff that he did when I was 12. Yeah. So my inner child has awakened in here, and it's based on the things that Ken was saying about being here with you guys and not isolating, because I spent a lot of time in isolation. Because I wanted to, and then not because I wanted to. I was put in my room a lot when I was a kid. Things were taken away from me. So that inner child didn't have any way to express itself. And so I had this wonderful, strong, powerful false self. When I got here and I heard about, so this actually happened in Al-Anon when I first heard about this false self thing. I thought, wow, I'm like 62 and I was 12, so for 50 years I've been this lie. That's how I looked at it, like I've been this. And then I found out, well, it's not a lie, it's just the thing that you created, this persona, this personality that you created to help you get through the life you were leading, which is, you know, way far away from my spiritual self. So I want to tell you a little bit about how I met Ken. I was sitting on a wall outside the Santa Barbara County Jail on a Saturday, And I was talking to another dad who I was like, your kid's in there? And he goes, yeah, and your kid's? Yeah. And we're going, well, how did they ever get in there? And, of course, feeling guilty. And Al-Anon had a table. He said, do you have a relative or a friend that's got an alcohol drinking problem? And they had, you know, people at the table. And I saw a lady at the table that I'd seen in meetings, so I went up to her and I said, do you know who's a good sponsor? And she said, yeah, and she pointed to this guy walking up, and it was Ken. And I'd never met him in my life. I never heard him say share or anything. But I went over to him, a leap of faith, and I said, would you be my sponsor? And he said yes. He didn't hesitate or anything. We'd never met before, and now 6 years later, we've gone through Al-Anon together. And I love this story. So we had worked the steps, and he said, like, the first time we ever talked, he goes, do you admit your life's, you know, unmanageable? And yeah, and I said, yeah. And he goes, do you believe in a power greater than yourself? And I said, yeah. And he said, were you willing your life over to the care of God? And I said, yes. He goes, well, then you're ready for step four. And so step four in Al-Anon is this book called Blueprint for Progress. And I don't think it's as... there's a lot of color in it. You know, like, you guys know how my big red book looks here because my inner child's all over the place in that big red book. And this is, you know, so we just finished the fourth step, and this is probably the fifth time or sixth time I've been through the fourth step in Al-Anon. And I just wanted to read this. So this is the summary. It goes, after writing a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, one thing is clear. We are still here. And I love that. Like, I didn't bail out. Like, I worked it all the way through. And I know, you know, that we come and go because, for whatever reasons, I've learned to try not to be judgmental, because I grew up in a family that was very judgmental. You know, I want to judge you if you're late to a meeting. I want to judge you for all kinds of things. And I've learned in here to back off from that. You know that we all have our different things going on. And I still have a lot of work to do, but that's, you know. So then, Ken and I were at lunch one day, and something moved me. I'm not a very religious guy or anything like that, and I decided to write a prayer. And I wrote a prayer, and I said, higher power, please help me forge a closer bond with my sponsor. And I read it to Ken, and I don't even know why I did that. And that was like on a Friday. And on a Wednesday, 4 days later, I go to my first ACA meeting, which is the Wednesday night meeting, the Big Red Book meeting. I walk in, and Ken is leading the meeting. And he never told me one thing about, he never even, like, you know, we were at lunch, and he never, like, put a Big Red Book over by the, you know. So I would, like, hey, what is this, Ken? He never did one thing about that. And so I scratched my head and I go, why didn't he ever say anything to me? Because if I, you know, like, if I see you in an Al-Anon meeting or an AA meeting, I go to those meetings. And if I think, wow, that guy's got, or she or he has something going on, childhood stuff, I'll go, hey, have you heard of ACA? Like, I'll just blurt it out, right? Ken never said one word to me. And I was listening to Tony A's CD the other day. I've listened to it, I don't know, 100 times. To try to figure out everything that he's saying, every little nuance that he's saying. And he talks about the AA steps and the Al-Anon steps are the perpetrator steps. So in other words, I did cause harm to all kinds of things, communities when I grew up, coaches, you know, teachers, loved ones, to my sons, to my ex-wife. I did all kinds of perpetrator kind of things. And Tony said those are the steps, the AA steps, the Bill Wilson steps are for perpetrators. And I have to make amends, and I have to ask for my defects of character to be removed, and all those kinds of things. So I said, Ken, I think that's why you didn't tell me about ACA, because I needed to get through all that stuff before I could then become working on my victim issues, you know, where I start to heal myself. I feel like I'm in here, and we are in here healing ourselves. And Tony talks about that in the steps. You know, we ask our power to help us with our healing process. We work on our unconditional love, because I came in here with, you know, In fact, the first time I was mentioned in an Al-Anon meeting about someone talking about their low self-esteem, I was blown away. Like, I can't admit that. I'm putting on a false self to you. I want you to think I'm okay. And I have terrible self-esteem. And my therapist, that was one of the things she said to me, and I love it because she said, you know, Larry, I think it all comes down to self-esteem for you. And I went, cool. Now what do I do about that? She didn't give me the answer, you know, and I think the best therapists don't give us the answers. They kind of, you know, like Ken didn't put a big red book by me. You know, I just somehow, my higher power brought me here. I read something in here. I was in an ACA meeting last night, and on page 180. And only in these programs I've been asked, were you a nerd in high school? And, like, yeah. And I go, no. I don't think anyone ever called me a nerd. But I know these page numbers. I don't know why I know these. So this was, we were talking about PTSD last night. And this is funny because it says right here, however, 25 years after the original incident, this woman's body, her stomach, remembered that hunger pain but transformed it into a comforting memory of canned potatoes with the help of her brain. I always thought my brain's what's messing me up. You know, stinking thinking, shitty committee, all that kind of stuff. But my brain can actually help me. It says it right here. I believe it. Mm-hmm. So that's when I started going, okay, my self-esteem, my brain, my heart, you know, those kinds of things can help me heal. So that I don't have to keep feeling the way I've felt about myself for my adult life. And then I had this thought the other day, too. Loving parent. Is that a mother or a father or a combination of the two? You know, I had a lot of issues with my mom, too. So I don't know. I used to think, like, do I have God as a pronoun or an it? Or what do I have for God or my higher power? And it doesn't really matter, but I want to feel like I have more than just, say, my dad or an image of a fatherly, loving parent. So I just thought about that. Here's another thought I had the other day. I was wondering if we should combine some of the 12-step programs. So, like, there's Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, and then there's Overeaters Anonymous. And I thought we should call it Sex Eaters Anonymous. And then I had one, IYARFU. And it's, if you're really fucked up, if you're really fucked up, RFU. What was it? Hold on, I wrote it down. Oh. What is it? Oh, if you're really fucked up, anonymous. And that's for everybody. You don't have to be an alcoholic or, you know, whatever. Low self-esteemer or a sex addict. Come on, you know, if you're really fucked up, come to our anonymous program. Those are the things that go through my head. What else? Oh, so Ken never mentioned this, you know, to ACA to me. He's leading the meeting. Then I decide I want to work the steps in ACA. So I asked him, hey, Ken, will you be my sponsor? And he goes, sure. And then we met, and he said, do you admit that you're upbringing, that you know you're powerless over your upbringing. I'm like, yeah, I can do that. And then we were going to meet again, and he had stuff at his work, and then I teach a sport, and all of a sudden I had lessons, and then all these things were going on, and then the fellow traveler co-sponsor thing, we read it in the Big Red Book, and I went, Ken can't be my sponsor, because I put him up on a pedestal, not as an authority figure necessarily, because I love him dearly, but I put him up as the teacher and me being the student, and they say, no, work it side by side. Because sometimes they hear in here, we don't have enough recovery, so how do we do the steps? You know, we only have a few people like Ken and Duncan and some other people that have been here a long time, long-timers. And then that's the fellow traveler thing, and I went, yeah, I guess I better do it that way. I've got to do it that way. So I had heard through the grapevine that there was a person that wanted to work the steps with me, so I called him, and he said, yeah, let's do the steps. And so we started doing the steps. Neither one of us had done the steps. And we did the first 6 months, meeting like an hour and a half, once a week, an hour and a half to 2 hours. And then he moved away. He moved to Seattle, and we decided to do it on the phone, and we did 8 more months. It took us 14 months to get through the yellow workbook. Whoops.
Ooh.
This thing right here. Right? I had to tape it back together a few times. I've been through it so many times. Thank you. So, and then I've been lucky. Some of you have asked me if I would work with you, and I said yes, and we've worked on the steps, and it's like side by side. Like, I don't feel like I know anything. I was in an Al-Anon meeting, and a person shared that the other day. I don't know anything. I thought, wow, that's pretty humble to say, because I think I know a lot. And then it's like, if I can be in that humble place where I don't really know anything, but I'm letting my heart or my spirit, like my higher power, you guys. I was in an AA meeting one time, and the speaker was wonderful. She was talking about all the craziness she did, and then, like stealing her doctor father's prescriptions and writing herself and things. And then she made amends, did all that stuff, got a master's degree from UCLA, and was writing prescriptions. And she thought that was kind of funny how that whole thing went through. And she was thanking you guys for teaching me, and you guys taught me that. And I sat there and I went, I'm never going to say that. I'll never say that. That's how arrogant I was. And now I say that with love to you guys, that I've started to hear in here. I hear all of you. And I couldn't hear you because I always knew what you were going to say before you said it. That's how I was raised too. Like, I know more than you guys, and I know I've got you figured out already. And that was that powerful false self that I had, to protect me. So, do you want to jump in, or do you want to do the traits? Show them how we do the traits. Okay. Lo and behold, I got through the steps, and you guys have helped me. And then I said, I know what I can do. I can work the traits with Ken. I bet he hasn't done it. And then tonight he said he's done it like 20 years ago. So we were working the laundry list traits workbook, right? And it basically says in here, work this when you've done the 12 steps, the yellow workbook. So we've been working, we've been meeting together, and this thing is crazy. I mean, there's a laundry list, there's the other side of the laundry list, which is the one I was with my sons, and I was a perpetrator, I was a manager at work, I was not the best manager, as far as co-workers or people that worked for me. And then there's flip sides to both of these, and these are where the healing takes place, where I'm being compassionate in my inner child, and my true self is working through this stuff. So Ken and I are on trait 10, and so we meet sometimes at, like a public place, like having food, and there's an orientation, and here's the orientation. So Ken, are we going to do this together?
Yeah.
So it says, look at some things. So I'm looking at the light, I'm looking at Eric. I'm looking at that person back there, those things draping on the wall. And then it says, make a noise. And we do this in public places. And then it says, eat a peach. And we don't usually eat a peach, but I brought a peach. Just before we even get to work the traits,
would you take the first bite?
I don't know if it's that ripe or not. Okay, for the program. Mm-hmm. This is in the book, I swear to God. Then it says, smell some cinnamon, and so I got some cinnamon. And Ken said it was okay if I said this, but sometimes here's the cinnamon. Sometimes we don't have any cinnamon, and I swear to God, one time when we got to this part, he smelled his armpit.
Next best thing.
And I thought, if it works for him, it works for me. And then it says, will you guys do this with us? Pat your face. And so it says, the point is to have something on hand to remind yourself that you are here and now while engaging in these tasks. Above all, be gentle with yourself when using this book. And so this is to get our senses going and being here now. And that's what we do. And we're not afraid to do it in public places. Obviously. So I don't know if we have anything else. Pardon?
Have you ever been asked to leave a place or
no? Thank you for asking that, William. I don't think we've been asked.
Not
we
yet.
Might have ignored being asked. So this is ACA sponsorship.
You want to talk about that?
Sure. So it says, someone whose shares of recovery inspire us. So this is like if I was looking for a sponsor. So if I heard, say, Ken's shares, which I have heard a lot of them, and I'm mostly, like, I know people say, wow, Ken's, like, and I go, yeah, can you believe that? He doesn't share, like, all the time. Like, I didn't have a voice growing up, so if you're in a meeting with me, you're probably going to hear me share. Because now that I have a voice. Someone who's worked all 12 steps or has worked the first five and is currently working their way through the rest of the steps. So I remember one time I was asked to be a sponsor in AA. I told this young man, he was in his 30s, I said, I've never worked the steps in AA. And he said, well, can we read the big book together? And I went, yeah, I can do that. And so then my oldest son, both my sons have worked the steps in AA. My youngest son just got his 2-year chip. And I got to go out to the Way of Life meeting. But my oldest son said, Dad, you can't be a sponsor. And then I think I asked my sponsor. And my sponsor said, work him as far as you've gone with the steps. And then, you know, he or she will find someone else. So if you haven't done the steps all the way, but someone says, would you work with me? Will you be my co-sponsor? I encourage you to say yes. Someone who is capable of being emotionally present, listens with compassion and understanding, and without rescuing and advice giving. And I've never, when I try to get him to say anything or to gossip or do anything, he always says, what does your higher power say? I never can. He's too good. Someone who can guide us in a way that is respectful of themselves and us as we work through the steps and traditions, and I underline traditions because I haven't worked the traditions in this program. We just started reading the traditions in some of our meetings here in Santa Barbara. Because when I first got to Al-Anon, it was like, hey, I've got all this pain. I don't care about meetings and traditions and slogans. And I don't, you know, I just need to get this, help me out of this pain that I'm in. And then it was like, oh, I guess I do care that there's a meeting place and that there's more people with me, you know, and that we have fellowship and the meetings need to have unity and da-da-da-da-da. And so, like, then it got beyond me. And then I heard the thing about service, being of service. Give back what was freely given to me, and then you hear it sometimes, the only way to keep it is to give it away. So I really feel that way too. Where do we find such a person? And I'll let Ken read this, or ask him to read it.
At your home group, some meetings indicate on their phone list persons willing to be sponsors and talking with people after the meetings. You may be told, no, do not take this as a personal rejection. People with recovery place limits on how many people they can sponsor.
They do. Somehow he said yes when I asked him, so maybe he had one more person he could do, or many.
I'm going to read this.
Sure.
Okay. So how do we work together? By first of all stating our personal boundaries, limitations, expectations, wants, and needs. How much time is each willing to give to this relationship? How often do you get together or talk on the telephone? Does either person want to set a time limit on the length of the relationship? Does either member want to periodically review the relationship? And what about celebrations, taking time to acknowledge gratitude for each other?
I remember in Al-Anon, we had a celebration.
Yeah.
We were there, we played some music for you.
Yes.
And we were celebrating Ken and the service that he gives to our community. So I was at that, I was very grateful. And I'm still very grateful.
I am very grateful for you, my friend.
Thank you. I was at an ACA meeting last night, and I was hoping the person would be here that shared this last night so that I could ask if it was okay to share it. And I don't believe that this person wrote it, but I want to share it with you. Here's what she said. If life gives you a cactus, you don't have to sit on it. I love that. So,
I wanted to say just a couple of words about. I'd really like to encourage everyone to either have a sponsor or co-sponsor relationship. It's really a very good way to work the program. And what I've learned in being a sponsor is that it's a wonderful way to help me to grow. I do it for me, you know. It's just incidental that I'm able to help other people. But I've learned that, you know, some of the best things that I can do are actually just to be a friend to somebody. And what do you want in a friend, right? Let me ask you, how many people here feel like they've had some sort of post-traumatic stress disorder from growing up in insanity, right? You know what one of the most effective treatments for PTSD is? Having somebody listen to you. Having somebody listen to you without judgment. Okay? As a sponsor, and actually we're very fortunate to have these rooms, because what do? We listen to one another. We don't talk back. We don't judge. We don't crosstalk. We listen to one another. That's so powerful. One of the best things I can do for anybody is just to listen to them without telling them what to do, without trying to fix them, without judging them. Just listen. And when asked, I share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm not telling anybody what to do. I'm not solving their problems. You know, pain is the touchstone of all spiritual progress. People need to feel their pain and work through it. As I was working through the steps and so forth, the laundry list, all of those stuff feelings came up. You know, the abandonment. Abandonment was huge. I felt like I was going to die, and I was able to call people in the program and talk to them, and they listened to me. They were there. And that helped me get through one of the hardest times of my life. So I would just encourage you, if be sponsor, be co-sponsor. It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing to do. When somebody, you know, we also say in the meetings, you know, when somebody starts to cry, we don't comfort them. We don't try to fix them. You know, it's hard to watch somebody melt down and cry and go through a lot of pain. I can't fix them. It's very important that they feel that feeling. And how can I feel that feeling? I have to feel my own feelings, right? And that helps me. It helps me not try it. I'm feeling my feelings. I'm okay with it. It's great. So it's a wonderful growth opportunity to sponsor people, be a sponsee, help one another, co-sponsor, and I would really encourage you to do that. So,
thank you, Ken.
Thanks, Ken.